The American Friends Service Committee believes there is that of God in everyone, and because of that, there is that divine spark that we can connect with any person. With us this afternoon to say a few words about this important case is Michael Deutsch. Many of us got to know Michael when he defended Mohammed Salah against charges of racketeering and providing support to Hamas, charges that were finally dismissed by a federal jury in 2007. Michael and his legal team were impressive to watch in the federal courtroom in Chicago. In fact, his closing testimony still gives me goosebumps when I recall his passionate words to judge and jury. It made me feel like I was in a scene from the movie To Kill a Mockingbird, where the audience rose after Atticus gave his summary statement. Michael Deutsch is our present-day Atticus, and it's an absolute delight that he joins us here today.
Thank you, Jennifer, for that wonderful introduction, and thank you for asking me to speak. For me, it is a real honor and privilege to be here and speaking at an event honoring Miriam Salah. For 20 years, continuing on, she has stood by her husband in opposition to this travail of political repression, unprecedented, that he's experienced. Without Miriam, our legal team would not have been as effective as we were. She was at every meeting. She was a part of every strategy. Her politics, her legal understanding was clear, and she made a big difference in terms of the effect on our case. So she's really, truly somebody who should be honored, who is an exceptional woman, an exceptional partner to Mohammed, an exceptional person as part of the Palestinian community in the Chicago area. I was asked to talk a little bit about the case of Mohammed Salah, and I'm not going to go on and on about it because it's been going on for 20 years and it still is going on. But I'm going to give you a little brief background about it and bring you up to date as to what's going on now. In 1993, Mohammed brought financial humanitarian aid to the West Bank to help people who were living under occupation and were suffering under the first Intifada. He was arrested by the Israeli military. He was taken to an interrogation center, and for 80 days he was literally tortured. He was deprived of sleep. He was tied to a small chair. He was beaten. He was threatened. His family, they said they knew who they were. They were going to get him in the United States. And he was essentially forced to provide a confession that resulted in him being imprisoned in Israel for 5 years. The confession was false, it was the product of torture, and when he was finally released and returned to his family in 2007 in the Chicago area, they were not done with him. The FBI was involved originally when he was arrested. They were feeding information to the Israeli interrogators as to what questions they asked him, and when he came back to Chicago, the FBI put an informant right next to him, even was in the crowd that greeted him when he came home from a jail in Israel. And this informant provided false information to the FBI over years of time, and the government didn't even believe the informant, so they dropped the investigation, and then 9/11 happened. And the Bush administration, led by the Attorney General Ashcroft, decided to renegotiate with that informant, and in 2005, they brought an indictment against him and Abdel Halim Ashgar, a Palestinian man who had run for the president of Palestine in 2005 in absentia. And they had never even met before. And they were both charged with Racketeering Influence Corrupt Organization Act, conspiracy to be part of a racketeering influenced organization, and he faced life imprisonment. And basically what the government said was that Hamas was a racketeering organization, even though when we think of racketeering organizations, we think of the mafia, we think of drug cartels, we think of organized crime. But they took this political organization who had been elected as the representative of the Palestinian people in Gaza, and they made it into a racketeering organization, and then they proceeded to use all the acts of Hamas, whether Mohammed was there or not there, involved or not involved, to try and prejudice the jury against him. In addition to that, for the first time in the history of the U.S. government, they brought the torturers from Israel to the United States to testify, to justify the confession that they extracted from Mohammed. But when they brought the torturers to Israel, they said that because they had procedures and policies that were confidential, classified, the U.S. closed the courtroom. They didn't let any of the press or any of the people in the courtroom. They let these torturers testify under false names. And every time the defense lawyers would ask about their methods or procedures or what they were allowed to do, the Israeli lawyer would whisper into the ear of the U.S. attorney saying, "That's classified." And then the U.S. attorney would stand up and say, "It's classified, they can't answer it." And over 300 questions were asked of these interrogators. And each time it was said to be classified and we weren't allowed to ask the questions. So what you had essentially was a military tribunal, similar to what Palestinians face in Israel every day, in a Chicago federal courtroom. A closed courtroom, people testifying under assumed names, and most of their testimony I couldn't even cross-examine them about. But fortunately, when we went to trial in front of a jury, they would have to at least say some of the things that happened to Mohammed, agree to it, or else it would be obviously not a fair trial at all. And as a result of that, and as a result of telling a Chicago jury made up of African American and white people about the case of Palestine, basically how their land was taken and how they were living and what the Intifada was in 1987 and what the repression was and why someone would come to the occupied territories with financial aid, humanitarian aid, and what was the intent of Mohammed Salah, he was acquitted of those charges and found not guilty by a jury. And Abdel Halim Ashgar was also acquitted. But unfortunately, Mohammed was charged, in addition with the RICO charge, of answering questions in a civil lawsuit untruthfully, in interrogatories that are propounded by plaintiffs in a civil lawsuit. The lawsuit was brought by the Israeli lobby and Zionist lawyers and sued all Palestinian groups who were allegedly providing aid to the people of Palestine, and they were saying that because somebody was killed by Hamas, if any of these people gave any money that found its way to Hamas, they could be liable in damages. And this was clearly a political suit. It was funded by the ADL. It was promoted by one of the main Zionist lawyers in the United States, a guy by the name of Nathan Lewin. And when Mohammed was asked questions, it was essentially to trap him into answering them untruthfully. And as a result of that, he was convicted and sent to prison for 21 months. Abdelim Ashgar, by the way, refused to testify in a grand jury, which is done by political people for the last 40 years. And as a result of that, he was given 11 years in prison. A nonviolent act of civil disobedience, he was given 11 years in prison, and he's in prison today. This is unprecedented. I've been representing people in front of grand juries for 40 years, and the worst sentence I've ever seen was 3 or 4 years. He was given 11 years for that act of nonviolent act. Anyway, Mohammed went to prison, he came home and returned to his family, and his travail is still not over, because when he was in prison in Israel, the U.S. government put him on a list as a special designated terrorist. He is the only U.S. citizen that's been on that list. He's been on that list for 17 years, and he continues to be on that list. And despite the fact he was acquitted by a jury, and if any involvement with terrorism, he remains on that list. Now, what does it mean to be on that list? That means that he cannot involve himself in any economic activity without a license from the U.S. government. He can't get a job. He can't go to a doctor. He can't hire a lawyer. When he hired me, I had to get a license from the U.S. government to represent him. And you can imagine the bureaucracy that's involved in getting these licenses. He can't take his kid to a ball game. He can't spend any money or receive any money unless he gets permission from the U.S. government through a formal license from the Treasury Department. And this has been going on for 17 years. You've heard of how they ban people in South Africa? Well, this is akin to being banned indefinitely. There was no hearing putting him on the list. There was no notice that he's on the list. There's no procedure to get off the list. So we brought a lawsuit last month, the Center for Constitutional Rights, a law firm of Matt Pierce and myself, brought a lawsuit to get him off the list. In addition to Mohammed being a plaintiff in the list, as Jennifer said, AFSC is also a plaintiff, and the Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee, because they cannot support Mohammed Salah, provide him with any type of political support or financial support without getting a license from the U.S. government. They can't go out to a press conference or write an op-ed piece of paper or promote a speaking tour of Mohammed Salah unless they get a license from the U.S. government. And that clearly violates their First Amendment rights as well as Mohammed's First Amendment rights. So we're in federal court here in Chicago. We're waiting for the government to answer. They're now claiming that if they could give AFSC a license to support Mohammed Salah, but that's not what the issue is. The issue is the First Amendment rights, the freedom of Mohammed Salah, his family, and all his supporters to act in their behalf. And I would say to you that we are in a very dangerous period in this country in terms of civil liberties. We hoped that when we had a new president in 2008, the issue of civil liberties would be resolved and a constitutional law professor at the University of Chicago would respect those civil liberties. But it's been just the opposite. The repression and the attacks on civil liberties have continued and broadened. We have a president with a kill list. We have material support criminalizing First Amendment activity. We have spying, etc. So, and now because there's a Democrat in power, we have a bipartisan attack on civil liberties. We have essentially a new normal here. And unless we begin to speak out against these kinds of things, the people who are under attack first are the Palestinian communities in Chicago and around the country, because those are the people they're targeting now, they're accusing of providing material support merely for promoting the cause and the right of the Palestinian people for freedom and liberation. So I would warn you that don't fall asleep on the issue of the rights of people to protest, to be active, to support international struggles around the world, because they're definitely under attack today. Thank you very much.
One thing I've noticed about giving people the Inspiration for Hope Award in our community is that the common response is, why me? Perhaps the humblest of them all to date is the sister I have the privilege to introduce next. She really tried to get out of taking this award. You've just heard about the case of Mohammed Salah. Imagine for a moment being part of his family. Imagine the sleepless, anxious days and nights they have endured for 20 years. For many of us, it would have been too much. We would have been too angry, too upset, too depressed, or too immobilized to continue the fight for justice. And yet this family, and in particular, Maryam Salah, has shown us grace under pressure. She has maintained her strong belief that the good in humanity will prevail. As a friend wrote of Miriam, her strength, dignity, and steadfastness with which she faced extraordinary challenges, even when she was almost completely alone, still raising her kids and advocating for Muhammad, made us all proud. Miriam has inspired many other families who are also facing loved ones in prison due to unjust laws and government harassment. Her example of faith and persistence gives hope and counsel to others and is critical to overcoming the isolation and indignities experienced by too many Muslim and Arab families in the United States. Miriam graduated from high school in California and college in Illinois with a BA and secondary teaching certificate. She later got a master's in literature and has taught elementary, junior high, and high school classes. Miriam's many community work contributions include establishing a tutoring service, managing medical transportation for the handicapped, and being active in the Parent-Teacher Association at her children's school. Her marriage to Muhammad of 30 years has blessed them with 5 children, ranging in age from 12 to 25. Miriam wrote to us that she hopes to get her PhD and write at least one book in the near future. So as you can see, her spirit and her commitment has not yielded to the immense challenges she and her family continue to face. The family of AFSC is indeed honored today to present to you Sister Miriam with the Inspiration for Hope Award and to thank you for your life's example of service and love.
Thank you so much. I am overwhelmed. It's been 20 years. My 6-year-old is a physician, practicing physician now. My 3-year-old is doing rotations, hoping to become a physician, finish up. My 1-year-old is interviewing for pharmacy schools. And we've had 2 more children since he came back. My 14-year-old teenager says, "Life is good, Ma." So something must be going right. And my 12-year-old is as vivacious and as happy as can be. And what warms my heart the most is, despite everything that has happened, we love our nation, we love our people, we are proud to be Americans, we think this is the best place to be, and that's why we're taking the stand that we're taking. Because we realized, you know, at the beginning I thought, it's just about me, it's about my family. And then I said, why should we bother others? Why should we get others involved? It's my problem. It took me years to realize that it's not about us. It's not about me. It's about all of us. It's about freedom, it's about justice. It's about hanging on to what our forefathers intended for our country to be. And so many people make so many sacrifices trying to make it here. And our nation is just too wonderful of a nation for us to let it get away from the original goal and what it meant to be. So that's why we're taking this stand. And Steve Seltzer, I lost my train of thought, I'm sorry. Anyhow, so here we are, and I feel so grateful to all the people who came and stood out with us for the sake of justice. Because they realize too that this is not only a test and a struggle for my family, but it's for all of us. It's for all of us, and it's for the better good. And we all have to make sacrifices, and we all have to give of ourselves. And we have to reach deep, deep within ourselves to give ourselves, just for the sake of all of us. And I think, you know, when there are trials and tribulations, there are those who might say, "Oh, why me?" And then they resent the whole experience and unfortunately miss out on everything that they could have gained from it. And then there are those who embrace it, who see it for the blessing that it really is, for a chance to be able to transform yourself, to a chance to be able to move forward, for a chance to be able to grow and get better. And I think after 20 years of this, my husband and I, we're the closest we have ever been. I love him with all my heart. And I know that he's on the terrorist list. So one of the things is that, and they put it in the in the filing that he cannot buy me flowers, so if that's an excuse, I'm sure he was happy to see that, especially because I always say, okay, how about some flowers? Okay, I'm on the list, you know. Anyhow, but and the way I feel to deal with trials and tribulations is to have sabr. Sabr is an Arabic word which includes patience, perseverance, steadfastness, and resolve. All of it together. And when we experience that, when we do that, you look around and everything looks beautiful, everything looks wonderful. I don't want to make light of the suffering of people. It's not easy. It hasn't been easy. There has been suffering, there has been sadness, there have been sleepless nights. There have been times I remember at first when they had them in prison that I had to carry my children, you know, we'll be out and we'll come back, and they're all so small, and I live on the third floor, and I had to carry them one by one, you know, up the stairs, and I was going up the stairs, I'm thinking to myself, you know, it hasn't been easy. It hasn't been easy for them when they asked, where was he, and why is this, and why can't we do this, and why can't we do that? It hasn't been easy when people were so afraid to ring my doorbell or you know, pick up the phone and call me. It hasn't been easy, but at the end of it all, if I had to go through it again, I don't wish it for anyone, but since I've been through it, I feel that I am a better person for it, that I've got to know so many people that in the normal course of my life, if I had lived a normal life, I would have never come across these people. And I'm grateful to all of you for being here. I'm grateful for all of you for your courage, because it takes courage to, you know, we say the land of the free and the home of the brave, right? Because it takes courage to hold on to freedom and to have justice, because there can be no peace without justice. Justice isn't, you know, it has to be there. It has to be so that we can have a peaceful world, we could have a peace of mind, peace of heart, and be able to go forward. I think for people who are going through this, I think first you have to realize that it's not about you. It's about all of us. And you have to, you know, stay strong and be hopeful. Be hopeful, because there is, you know, life is not easy, but life is good. And every one of us, for standing up to justice, we're working for our whole, as a, you know, collectively, for the whole of humanity. What I can tell you is that it's about all of us again, the whole human family, one body, one family. One diverse yet loving and cohesive family without limitations of borders, boundaries of time or place. Thank you so much, and may God bless all of us.